How many of you had a chance to see the Super Bowl last week, or at least tune in at some point? Yeah, it's kind of hard not to, right? You have to. It's like an American ritual. You at least, even if you're not interested in the football game, which by the way was a good football game, for a change. Sometimes it's not always the case. Everyone feels at least a little bit compelled. It's been called one of America's national holidays. And you hear all the statistics about how much food we eat and how many people miss work the next day. It's a crazy number. And some of you I know could care less about the football. And what do you tune in for? The commercials, right? And the commercials are part of it. And this year, I think there were some good ones. There were some mediocre ones and some that I particularly liked. Anyone like this one? The Park the Car up in Boston. Yeah, and for Hyundai and some of the celebrities, John Krasinski and Chris Evans, Rachel Dratch, and the amazing self-parking car in Boston. That was kind of clever. We had a take on The Shining, the Mountain Dew take on The Shining, to the crazy Jack Nicholson figure coming through, bursting through with the Mountain Dew. I thought one of the most clever ads, actually, because it was Groundhog Day, was Bill Murray doing a Groundhog Day thing for, I guess it was for Jeep that he was doing. Yeah, very clever with the groundhog strapped in next to him, if you can see. And then there was Jimmy Fallon, who was like failing miserably at his personal workout and personal trainer, and finally the Roots band comes up alongside of him, cheers him on, and he gets better and stronger and kind of clever by the end. But he's pretty sore. You see him in a giant vat of ice at the end of it. You can go funny, or you can go kind of sweet, right, with the ads. That's the two directions you can go with Super Bowl ads. Either really trying to be funny and edgy, or sweet. And who would have thought that Google, of all people, would have had one of the sweetest ads about how Google could allow this man to remember who was... Obviously, you got the sense he was losing some memory as he aged. But Google had these pictures and all of this history that allowed him to remember his wife. And that was a really sweet ad. The other ad that I thought was so powerful, I did not see it in real time, but I owe Reverend Nicole a shout-out for this, because she texted me during the Super Bowl last week and said, "Ron, did you see the New York Life ad? It made me remember your sermon, your first sermon here, back in 2014. If some of you may recall, in my first sermon, I talked about my job here as your pastor was to keep good going, to help you keep good going. It wasn't to bring the good. It was already here, but to help keep the good going. And so I was out lighting the grill at the time, so I missed it in real time. But of course, I went back, and since then, I've seen it a bunch of times on the air. And I'm going to give you a chance to see it, and you'll see why Nicole liked it so much and why I think it's pretty special, too.
The ancient Greeks had four words for love. The first is philia. Philia is affection that grows from friendship. Next, there's storge, the kind you have for a grandparent or a brother. Third, there's eros, the uncontrollable urge to say, "I love you." The fourth kind of love is different. It's the most admirable. Called agape. Love as an action. It takes courage, sacrifice, strength. For 175 years, we've been helping people act on their love so they can look back or look ahead and say, "We got it right. We did good."
Be good at life. That last kind of love is the kind of love that New York Life may have been dealing with for 175 years, but the Bible's been talking about throughout its whole history, right? For a couple thousand years, we've been talking about that agape kind of love that is deeper, it is unconditional, it is the love that acts, it is the love that does something. It is the power of God's love to redeem us and to change us and to make life worth living. That is the theme all throughout the Bible. If you start in Genesis, if you read through the covenant stories, if you read through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus, if you read all through the letters of Paul like we have before us today, that is the overarching thing, this amazing power of God's love to transform and save the world. Now, the issue when we get to Galatians is that there is a group of people. Paul has kind of planted seeds of faith in that community. And there's a group of people known as the Judaizers. They were people who felt like to be a Christian, you had to first become Jewish, right? Because after all, Jesus was Jewish, and this was a Jewish faith, at least in the early days. And one of the radical things that happened in the early church was what? This understanding that God's love wasn't just for the covenant people of Israel, it was for everybody. And whenever you make God's love for everybody, it's a dangerous thing. There are going to be people who resist that. And certainly in the early church, that was the case, right? They felt like you had to jump through some hoops. You had to prove your mettle. You had to prove that you belonged in this community. And so there were people, literally, they were called the circumcision party, who felt like if you wanted to become a Christian, if you were Gentile, you first had to be what? Circumcised. Prove that you're really Jewish first in order to follow Jesus and be part of this new thing, this new Jesus movement. And so Paul is arguing fiercely against that understanding of limiting God's love or putting conditions on God's love all throughout the book of Galatians. That's kind of the general argument throughout the whole six chapters of the book. And there are some other paths that he takes, but that's the dominant thing that's happening in the book of Galatians. And so when we get to chapter 5, at the beginning of chapter 5, before what we read today, it says, "For freedom Christ has set you free. Stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to a yoke of slavery." The slavery being a slavery to the law, having to fulfill righteousness through the law. He says, "For in Christ Jesus, neither circumcision nor uncircumcision counts for anything. The only thing that counts is what? Faith working through love." That's it. That's what it comes down to, this life in Jesus. It is God's love that redeems us, no strings attached. You don't have to do this first in order to be loved by God. You just simply are loved by God. And then you are part of God's beloved community. You are part of the power of love working in the world. It is a faith that works itself out through love. Now, the verses we skipped today are kind of some of Paul's, I would guess, sauciest or spiciest verses. You know, he goes on to say that, you know, if you're so big into circumcision, you guys, I wish you would go the next step yourselves. That's what he says. Like, he says, I wish you would emasculate yourselves. He's that fierce in his argument that they got it wrong, right? They've got it wrong. They're missing the point of who Jesus is. Now, the other night, I've been hanging out with our guests most evenings this week, as many of you have. And one of the delightful evenings was not over there. I had a lot of great conversations and things at the tables and meeting people over there. But it was kind of migrating back to the music room where one of our guests, Jeff Shelton, who's going to sing for us at our 9:30 service today, was in there jamming with Chris and with Andre, who was a guest musician that was here. And they were just having so much fun singing. And he wanted to do a Joe Cocker song. How many of you remember the days of Joe Cocker? That's a little while ago, right? But he did this amazing version. He's going to sing it for us. I'm sure it's the first time it's ever been sung in this sanctuary. "Unchain My Heart" by Joe Cocker. And as I was hearing him sing it with full throat and full spirit, I thought, that's what Paul is talking about. Unchain our hearts. Set us free for the power of love. That's what he's talking about in the fifth chapter here. "For you were called to freedom, brothers and sisters, only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for self-indulgence, but through love become slaves to one another." Don't use your freedom to just go off and do your own thing. That was the fear in the early church, right? If we take away the strings, then people are just going to do whatever they want. And Paul consistently says that is to misunderstand what grace is. That is to misunderstand what the power of God's love is about. You are to become bonded to each other in love. Because you have been loved yourself, you also love each other. "For the whole law is summed up in a single commandment, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." Galatians 5:14. Now, how many of you remember this song, taking you back to the 1980s now, 1985 to be exact? Today's song, you know, Carissa had a much more contemporary song last week. She's much younger than I am. But I remember this song when it came out. Huey Lewis in the News, powerful song, right? The power of love. And not only was it a hit on the radio stations, but it was a hit in a movie. Anyone, bonus points? Remember the movie that it showed up in as well? Back to the Future, right? And Huey Lewis is actually a judge in that movie. He shows up as the talent judge in that movie as a small bit part. But that song becomes part of that movie, and it was on the radio all the time back. That's the power of love, and I can still hear the thump thump. We're going to hear a more acoustic version of that today that Chris is going to do for us at the offertory. But the words go like this: don't need no money, don't take fame, don't need no credit card to ride this train. It's strong and it's sudden and it's cruel sometimes, but it might just save your life. That's the power of love. That's the power of love. It might just save your life. Paul goes on to talk about what this love looks like. He gives us vivid examples. He says the fruit of the Spirit, when we are living in God's Spirit, when we've tasted this love, when we've taken it in, when we've trusted this love, this is what it does to us. This is what it does in us. It produces fruit. And the first of those is love. And I think love encompasses all of the rest of these: joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. There is no law against these things, Paul says. It's the power of love working itself out in all of those characteristics of a believer. The radical thing that Jesus does is, there were a lot of people before him, other rabbis, and the scriptures, the Hebrew scriptures, speak about loving God and loving your neighbor, right? That's not new with Jesus. What is new is that Jesus inextricably links the two of those. He puts them side by side. Here's the greatest commandment, and the second one is like it. And you can't have one without the other. They are inextricably bound to each other. Tom Berlin says there is this virtuous cycle that happens. When we love God, it propels us to love our neighbor. And when we love our neighbor, we find ourselves being drawn closer to God. We need each of those things. Tom Berlin puts it this way. Let's see. He says, the truth is God is messing with you. He's talking about when God puts people in our lives that are hard to love. God is messing with you because we need those people. The Lord is pushing you to activate the virtuous circle, this love of God and love of neighbor and love of neighbor and love of God, this interplay between the two. When you learn to love that particular hard to love neighbor, you will discover things about God and learn to stand in wonder of God in ways you would not have discovered without the neighbor. We can't just love God in a vacuum. We can't just go off on our own and love God purely. No, to love God is to love our neighbor. And in the loving of our neighbor, even the hard ones, especially the hard ones, we discover the character and the depth of God's love for us. And we understand that better. So there's this inextricable bond between the two. Now, I've been seeing the power of love in so many ways. I've seen it in a lot of lines that look like this week. Meal after meal that was served in our kitchen. The choir showing up on Thursday night and Lynn Weber holding forth in our kitchen as she should, along with Ann Harrison. Ann, I don't think, there weren't many days I didn't see you about 17 times, I don't think. I saw it in the early morning breakfast cruise that came out every day and got there so early. What time did you get there, the breakfast cruise? Yeah, 4:45, 4:45. And it was, you were up and doing stuff before the guests were even up, but you were there to provide. And I tried to catch the tail end of that, and I had a lot of great breakfast this week, and I just wanted to come and honor all of our volunteers that were serving it that early morning. It was all in the relationships and the stories that we got to share with our guests, just the chance to sit and to talk and to learn that our lives are not that different. We presented this gentleman with one of our shirts because he was admiring the shirts, and he had a shirt very much like ours. And so Kathy got him a shirt to wear. We learned that we weren't the only ones passing on faith. We were gathering faith. We were gaining strength from our guests who already have faith. A lot of smiles, a lot of laughter, a lot of relationships. And that's what this week is about. That's the power of love. The power of love is in every baked potato, every Rice Krispie coated piece of chicken, every glazed carrot, according to Gwen Grubb. Those are her favorites. The power of love is in families showing up to serve with one another, calling bingo games. And it's amazing how much the guests love our bingo games, isn't it? Like, we have to do it not once, not twice, but three times during the course of the week, whether you win or not. But that's a great moment when you get a chance to win. And the prizes that you give and donate, so many of you donate prizes and you can't even be there, but that's the power of love, just those affirmations that you give to the guests. It's multi-generation families serving together. It's a husband and wife team volunteering so sweetly to be evening hosts. It's our kids showing up and learning the power of love. In every bowl of salad, in every tray that they pass out, do you see anybody you know there? See anybody you know? Okay, just want to make sure. Just want to make sure Jonathan saw himself. Every piece of bread lovingly handled many times and passed out. That whole crew of families, young families and young adults that was here Wednesday night, one of my favorite nights to be here. And new people coming and serving for the very first time, and people who have served around here for a long time as well. It's all the power of love that makes that happen. It was the power of love in a different way that I saw in action on Friday, as Heidi's already alluded to. It was the teachers who cared so tenderly for the students right in that aftermath of this tree falling on the building and shaking the building and scaring these little kids. I came down right after the memorial service and I was talking with the kids, and some of the kids were telling me that they were very brave, and others were telling me that they were very scared, and I cried. And I said, well, it's the job of the brave ones. If you're one of the brave ones, you help the ones who were scared. That's what you do. And the teachers who did that so well, and Dave who sprung into action immediately, and the whole crew of people who were out there. Dixie Catlett was down there sweeping stuff up and helping to pick it up. I had the privilege of a lot of bonding time with Dave on the roof on Friday afternoon as we hauled away this tree that had like literally gouged into the roof, and Dave with his chainsaw and me with just my manual labor pulling all of the pieces off that roof. It was the tender love I got to see, a powerful love, like last Saturday when we said goodbye to Chris Jackson. And to see all the love in this room, in this sanctuary, from his family and his friends. And Biscuit Bill with his good friend Baxter. And to see Chip and Hope and their whole family here on Friday, when all this was happening, by the way, just a little excitement going on. That's right. He went out with a bang. That's right. But that was tender love and powerful love all together. It's the love of God that allows us to say with confidence, we trust our beloved to you now because we know your love is sure and strong. One of the books I've been reading recently, off and on, is a book that Chris introduced me to. It's by Bob Goff. It's called Everybody Always. And the subtitle would be love, right? Everybody, you love everybody, and you love them always. And it's a great book. If you like an easy read, short chapters, great stories. There's a story about kind of this relationship that he strikes up with a guy at the TSA, you know, the guy that has to check everybody. And because he travels so much, he gets to know him, and he engages him in these, he talked about their friendship that was carried on in 3-minute conversations, like as he was in line and all these conversations that happened over the years. It was just those making the effort to humanize things. There's a great story about that. He tells a story about a woman in their neighborhood who contracted cancer, and they had this little neighborhood parade that used to happen that he and his family started on New Year's Day. It started really small and it grew to like 500 people. And then the last year of her life, how they took that parade. One year when she had been diagnosed with cancer, he had gotten her to ride in the sidecar of the motorcycle with her, just down their street, not very far, not a big parade. But the next year, right as she was near death, they actually marched the parade up to her window where she was sitting. She could no longer come out for the parade. But every one of the neighbors pushed their heads up, their faces up against the window and kissed through the window and the glass and talked about this, the power of love that way. And then he tells a story about his own son who got to try to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. Every time his child would turn 10 years old, he had three kids, he would do something special with them and let them pick. And this is what his 10-year-old son picked. I want to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. Now, most of us would say, nice idea. Why don't we go and see if we can find something at Target, right? But he actually did that with his son. And his son didn't make it all the way. His son made it only to 16,000 feet. And the father made it up to the summit. But what he did when the decision was made to turn around and to go back down with a guide who was going to take his son safely down to the bottom, he had this ceremony for his son. He brought all these medals for him that he could pin on him about his courage and about all that he had accomplished and all that he had done. It was just a beautiful, beautiful moment. He said this about that moment. He says, too many times we tell people where they have failed. And that could have been a moment to say, oh, good try. You didn't quite make it, but good try. That's not what he did with his son at all. He said, look how far you've come. He says, go do that with the people you love, including your enemies. Don't talk to them about their failures and the dark places they've been. Talk to them about who they're becoming and the bright hope that is their future. Speak truthful and wise words over them. Bring a few medals too. As you put the last one on their chest, look them in the eye and tell them, look how far you've come. Knowing that the journey you and I are on never really ends, we can ask people we love one of the most important questions ever conceived. Where do you want to go? Like, what's before you? How can I love you to help you take that next step in your own life? How can I affirm how far you've already come? And I think that Winter Relief is our opportunity to do that, right? Not to shame anybody, not to blame anybody, but to affirm in love and help people take a next step. He says, in the simplest terms, Jesus came to the earth, declared he would turn God's enemies into his friends. He convinces us with love, and he does it without fear or shame. He lets the power of love do all the talking for him. Loving each other is what we were meant to do, and it was how we were made to roll. Friends, that's the power of love. Thanks be to God.